Covering the crew all season long on WTMJ. This is Brewers Extra Inning. Now live from American Family Field, here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
Well, for the first time in the month of May, the Brewers have lost a series. And it's to the defending world champs two times over, the LA Dodgers. Not a slouch by any stretch of the imagination. They fall today by a 5-1 final score. With Jerry Augustine, I'm Dom Catronio. You know, as we'll dive into the specifics of this game and this series overall as we recapped every single game here, Augie, but I just sit here and I think, especially these last 36 hours or so, and you can even argue, aside from two innings on Friday, the Brewers did not play their best baseball this weekend, and it's a shame that they did not play well when you want to play well against the defending champs, the team that knocked you out. They played well for roughly three innings this whole week, and I know they pitched it okay on Friday, but it's just, you know, when you're facing a team like the Dodgers and you need to be sharp, they were not sharp, and they got beat up for it.
They sure did. You know, you'd look at this series. The series was all about the Dodgers putting up crooked numbers, and you look at each day when they put up some crooked numbers, they were in the ball games or they won two ball games. And but you know, you look at it. There's a couple of things when you look at it. You know, you look at the Brewers, this pitching staff, this three game series, 23 walks in three games.
Can't happen.
You can't have it. You can't have it against a team that has got the potency of a Los Angeles Dodgers. And I think when you look back at it, you take away, you cut those in half, I think we got some different ball games.
I mean, there's a direct correlation. We have every number in the book that you could ever look up in baseball, right?
Right.
But sometimes one thing that I like to look at is just simply there is a direct correlation with how many walks you allow and how many runs are scored. It's not hits. It's not batting average. It's not slugging. One of the stickiest numbers is how many walks, and there is a very strong correlation between walks allowed and runs allowed. And you look at it tonight, you know, you once again struggle with the free passes. He had six total. Two of them were in garbage time of this game. But Brandon Sproat allowed four or three runs of his own, four walks. I mean, it's a direct correlation because it's a shame because Sproat pitched better than the line indicates. We'll talk about him in a moment. But I think right now the story is just the lack of sharpness from the entire pitching staff. Do you see a common thread? Do you see anything that leads to this many walks in a series against the Dodgers?
I think, you know, the Dodgers come in and you look at them and you can say, hey, you know, this is an offensive team. This is like an all-star team coming in to play you, and you got to be very efficient. And I think the one thing that you talk about this series here is pitching efficiency. You got to go out and you got to command the strike zone. You look at Sproat today, 89 pitches in four innings. A lot of pitches for four innings. And you look at that, what is trying to be too fine and pitches. Yeah, did he throw the ball good? I thought he threw the ball good. Mm-hmm. But was he efficient? No. And when you get to a team like this, it all comes down to you walk people, you're going to get hurt. And it all comes down to you got to be efficient. Look at this Brewer ball club when they're on a good roll, when they're playing real well. Look at them in Chicago. Pitching was fantastic. Not walking guys, getting ahead of guys. Your pitching efficiency means so much. But I think when this Dodger team came in, sometimes you look at what teams you're playing, you feel you got to be more efficient than you really have to be. And I think that's the story of the series.
I mean, you look at the difference of the two starters, right? Sproat was at 90 pitches in the fifth inning, and it didn't make Yamamoto get to 90 pitches until the seventh inning.
That's right.
And I think that, you know, overall, you know me, I like to compliment whenever I see good pitching on the other side. Mm-hmm. I thought Yamamoto was good, but not, like, great. I thought he was perfectly fine. What I was impressed with was the splitter was working as a ground ball pitch today. It wasn't working as a whiff pitch, and the Brewers, rightly so, were trying to swing early against him because the last thing you want is to be two strikes against Yamamoto with that split, with that curveball, and they were putting a lot of swings on it. Yamamoto caught on, fed him more splitters early, and we saw a bunch of ground balls.
Yeah, he did. It looked like early in the ballgame he wasn't efficient. He was kind of all over the place, and the Brewers were having some pretty good at-bats against him. But it just seemed like he got to about that third inning, and all of a sudden he found that fastball. He found a fastball at a good location. He was throwing it up in the zone. He's going in and out, going east and west with it, and then all of a sudden that split finger came out a little bit, and he was starting to throw, be very efficient, getting ahead of hitters, being able to use it down his zone. Yeah, this is one pitch that He throws I just watched the ball come out of his hand, and it's very, very difficult when you see a fastball and a split finger come exactly where they come about, exactly where they have to do together. It's hard to pick up, and I think that's his key pitch. When he can throw those and throw those for strikes, he's going to be very efficient. About the third or fourth inning, he found that.
Offensively tonight, there just wasn't a lot to write home about. No extra base hits. They were pretty quiet with runners in scoring position. In fact, they didn't actually get a hit with a runner in scoring position in today's game. The only run scored on an RBI fielder's choice. But again, that could be kudos to Yamamoto in a certain way. But at the same time, when the Brewers are neutralized of one of their best tools of stealing bases or putting the ball in play with hard hits anyway, it's not always just, you know, little squibbing, you know, dying quails or anything like that. They can hit hard ground balls. They were not doing that today. That's where I tip my cap to Yamamoto. And then once again, the Dodger bullpen now on a streak of 38 consecutive scoreless innings going back the last 2 weeks or so. Just no funny business. Six up, six down, four strikeouts for them. They look like a juggernaut right now, as they're supposed to.
Well, I'll tell you what, this bullpen, and I watched them all three games, and I'll tell you what, they dominate with their fastball. They locate their fastball, and there's just like we talk about the Brewer pitchers, your best pitch is your fastball, 90% of the guys. They locate the fastball where they have to in the zone, and they dominate with the secondary pitches. They've been throwing good secondary pitches. When they get the Brewers leading on secondary pitches, what do they do? Elevate the fastball up and in on guys. And I thought the Dodgers relievers did a great job of locating their fastball, getting ahead of hitters, and then utilizing those secondary pitches like you have to. A lot like this Brewer pitching staff in the bullpen does when they're right on, when they're throwing the ball well.
Yeah, the Dodger bullpen had more strikeouts than Yamamoto did today.
Yes,
to give
did.
You an idea of how the Brewers are trying to swing to contact, trying to get the ball in play early against Yoshi. Let's talk a little bit more about the offense in depth. Then we'll get to Brandon Sproat, because he ends up being a footnote when you only score one run. And then even yesterday, just the three-run first inning. It was a very quiet Saturday-Sunday for the Brewers offense. What actually could change? 855-616-1620 is the phone number. 855-616-1620 right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Who's hot, who's cold? It's brought to you by Cider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical. As the Brewers fall 5-1 today, the offense is certainly cold, but we'll touch on it a little bit more here in this second segment with Jerry Augustine. I'm Dom Catronio. With summer heat coming fast, don't get caught without a working AC when you need it most. Cider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical is offering $25 off AC tune-ups, but it's only through the end of May, so you got to hurry. Appointments are filling fast. Schedule today at Cider, SEIDER.com before it's too late. You know, Augie, when I look at the bottom half of this order today, and specifically the bottom third, because Garrett got on base twice today. He went 1-for-2 with a walk and a single. Sal had a tough day with three groundouts. Joey Ortiz, an infield hit on a shattered bat, 1-for-3. David Hamilton, 0-for-3. We've been saying this for the last couple of weeks of this bottom third of the order needs to get going. Now, on Joey's front, you could see what he was doing, or why he's in the lineup, is because of the value he brings defensively. He made a couple of really nice plays today, including that great sliding stop against Mookie Betts. But, you know, Renjifo didn't play these last two games. Hamilton didn't really get tested defensively these last couple of games either. But, you know, when I sit here and I go, hey, these guys are getting their opportunities, at some point it's going to flip. I don't know how many more times I can say that before the sample size gets too large to make an admission of, oof, something needs to change there. But in my opinion, Augie, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, the Brewers' best lineup in all facets probably includes Joey Ortiz, but yet when it comes to games like this where it gets magnified at how little offense there was and how many times they came up with men aboard, not necessarily primary scoring position, it feels worse than it actually is, in my opinion, where it feels like every time it's, you know, Renjifo or Ortiz or Hamilton or Frehlich coming up in a run scoring situation, and the numbers are not pretty to this point in the year. And I wonder what the Brewers are thinking inside their ivory tower, of thinking, well, is one guy really going to inject enough offense in there to get this bottom of the order going? I don't know what Matt Arnold can really do with the way that he sets up his lineup.
I think when you play against a team like the Dodgers and they're going to come at you with their pitching staff that they have in their bullpen, as the way it's throwing right now, I think you kind of get a judgment on your ball club. Mm-hmm. I think when you look deep in a ball club, a Joey Ortiz is a guy who can fit in any lineup because of what he does defensively. What he can do offensively, if you can just swing the bat a little bit better, you'd really like that. But what he brings to this team defensively, you all look at, I always refer to it back as Mark Belanger. Mm. Mark Belanger was a one low 200 hitter, but he got everything in sight and played really good shortstop. But you had good guys around me. You had Brooks at third base. Dower at second base. You had guys swinging the bat. I think the Brewers are in that same situation where you got to get production. You got to get production at certain spots on your ball club. And you have to look at this ball club. This outfield is as good as any outfield in baseball. Mm-hmm. I think they can do everything defensively. I think offensively they're really special. I like Garrett Mitchell. I think he's, as the season goes along, he's going to get better and better. Had a nice base hit today. But you look at that, and they're qualified out there because you have guys that can go back and forth in universal. I think when you look at this time on the right side of the infield, I mean, it's good. Terang is one of the better players in all of baseball. And at first base, you got two guys that can swing the bat, drive the ball at a ballpark, and you look what Bauer's doing for you right now. It's pretty special. I think when you look at it, it's that one part of this ball club is on the left side of the infield. And you get production out of one out of two, you can kind of make hay with that. You can kind of say, well, you know what, Joey's not swinging the bat, but we got someone who's swinging the bat and drive the ball, drive runs in. It's not happening. It's not happening where you're getting that consistent production. And I think you'll agree with me, consistent production out of that side of the infield is so important to take this ball club over that next step where they have to be.
I mean, there's two home runs on the left side of the infield all season between Joey Hamilton and Renjifo. And you can also look at Sal Frelick in right field. He's been virtually the everyday right fielder. He's played great defense. We all know that's part of his calling card, but he has not been the same himself offensively to start the year. And, you know, I had him on a Brewers Weekly earlier in the season. He said, look, it takes a long time to have a bad season.
Yeah.
And a lot of Brewers share that sentiment. And that was an old quip from Andy Haynes that Christian Yelich lives and swears by. And he is right. Now, when you look at it for a everyday player like Sal, he's going to get to 550, 650 plate appearances.
Right.
We're at about 150 right now. So we're about a quarter of the way, not even a quarter of the way, of how many plate appearances he's going to be. And this first quarter have not been his usual self. It doesn't mean it can't be an adjustment, but of course every Brewer fan wants him to make that adjustment sooner as opposed to later, because his role on this team is to muck it up, cause chaos, get aboard, get on to second. And Pat Murphy talked about this at length yesterday in the pregame scrum, saying the job of the bottom third of the order is get on first. That is the only job. It's not about hitting 15 homers for this season. It's not about how many doubles you're getting. The only job for the bottom half of the order is get on first. And maybe that simplicity is all it's going to take for this lineup to really become dynamic and have more length to it, like you see from the Dodgers side of things.
Yeah, and when you see this ball club, you see when you get production out of that side of the club, out of that side of the infield, what the difference is. It's totally different the way this ball club plays. If they get on base, if they're drawing walks, putting the ball in play, moving runners over, running the base as well, playing the strong defense that you have to play, it really does make a difference, but it doesn't happen on a consistent basis. Everything is based on baseball, is doing something unproductively, consistently. And if you can do that, you're going to be successful. Now, can it happen? We're going to have to wait and see what the Brewers do and how they make their moves and how this spans out over the next several weeks. But they need some more production out of the left side of the infield. There's no question about it. And I think they understand that. But are they going to be a little bit more patient with these guys? They're playing great baseball. When you're thinking 17-7 out of the last 24, you're thinking 12-4 out of the last 16. Are they going to be a little bit more patient? Now we're getting back in where we're going to go play inside the division a little bit. So it's going to get interesting. But I think the telling story of this will happen over the next 2 to 3 weeks to see what's going to happen if the Brewers don't make a move prior to that.
Yeah, and a lot of people on the text line agreeing with me, saying it's time for Jett Williams to at least be given a shot. I wonder what the Brewers would do, because they're in this sort of, you know, in between of, well, do they option David Hamilton? Do they option Joey Ortiz?
That's right.
Do they DFA Renjifo? I don't like talking about roster moves for guys that are on the active team, but like, that's the only decision the Brewers can really make if they're going to call up Jett Williams, unless it's, you know, going with a man short in their outfield and optioning somebody like Blake Perkins. Again, that's kind of the conundrum the Brewers are dealing with right now of How do you inject some lineup? Are you sure it's even going to inject some offense into this lineup when you call up Jet? What if he gets off to a slow start and then, you know, people are panicking again? It's not that simple, but 50 games in and having the fewest home runs in baseball, having one of the lowest slugging percentages is certainly alarming, but let's talk about this in another 25 games. I want to judge the next 25 games of slug for the Brewers. Now, they may still be toward the bottom at the end of these 25 games, but in this sprint of 25, now that Vaughn's back, Yelly's back, Churio's back, you know, that you have the proper order, I'm sure more power will come, and the weather is also going to help with that, too.
Oh, there's no question. I think the home run totals are going to get better. This team is capable of swinging the bat and hitting some home runs, especially in our ballpark here. It's a great ballpark to hit home runs. The ball goes to the gaps. It hits real well. It's going to be interesting. Once you get out here the next 25 games, and this is the little time period you're going to use, is to see how it does pan out. But it all comes down to production. And the production not always is a home run from the left side of the infield. It's getting on base and doing the little things you have to do to help the ball club win. When the ball club wins and the left side is doing real well, that's fine. That's great. That's what you want to see. But I think when you find it, efficiency on a consistent basis, this is one of the areas I think that they're looking at real seriously.
I think I overspoke, too. I think the Brewers only have one home run from the left side of their infield. Actually, I correct myself there. I think I said two. But the point still stands. It's not very many. I've got some interesting numbers I want to present to you about Brandon Sproat. And I just kind of want to do a thought exercise coming up on the other side of the break of understanding how early we are in all of this for Brandon Sproat, because you'll hear from Pat Murphy later on. He really liked what he saw from Brandon. We'll expound on that as the Brewers fall 5-1 today to the Dodgers. They drop the series 2-3 on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings.
Welcome back. Still got plenty to talk about. Despite a disappointing weekend against the Dodgers, the Brewers are still 30-20. Given Memorial Day is the unofficial day that you're allowed to look at the standings, my own self-imposed rule. I personally don't look until July. I don't really care until July. But no matter what, you're going to wake up tomorrow in first place in the Central Division at 30-20. St. Louis coming to town for a three-game set. It's sort of a yardstick for St. Louis as it is for the Brewers against the Dodgers, where it's, all right, well, that was the split in the Lou right. With the rain. So St. Louis wants to see, all right, let's see the top of their rotation. Let's see Miz and Harrison, see what we can do against those guys. And they're going to be coming in hot, looking for it. And the Brewers are going to try to get back on track. And this will be a fun week of baseball with the Miz going tomorrow.
A little telling series. You got a telling series against the Dodgers. Kind of see where you're at. This team was come in playing very well. And now here come the Cardinals, because everybody's wondering, what are the Cardinals doing? They're just playing very good, solid baseball. And I think this is going to be a little test to them to see where they are in this division. This division yet going into today is all 500 or greater. It's one of the better divisions in all of baseball. And the St. Louis Cardinals are right near the top, yep, playing good baseball. So next three games are going to be a nice test for the Cardinals as well as the Brewers.
Yeah, the Cardinals got washed out today in the finale in Cincinnati, so they're probably all fresh and ready to go. Matthew Liberatore will be the opponent for the Brewers tomorrow. Now, I want to talk about Brandon Sproat here. A few folks on the text line agree that it was close and kind of in between of, do you send him back out there for the fifth? Do you not? It was key for his development to get back out there for the fifth inning. We talked about the inefficiency so far, but I want to bring you some numbers here. You know me. I try to make comparisons, try to, you know, convey how I feel about a guy. And I look back last season. Now we're 10 appearances into this for Brandon Sproat as a Brewer. In the first 10 appearances for Quinn Priester last season, the numbers are pretty similar. And I want to just lay them out here for you. 50 2/3 last year for Quinn, 44 2/3 for Sproat. So 6 innings difference. Mm-hmm. Walk rate, Sproat has it 3 points worse than Quinn. Quinn had an 11% walk rate, and then Brandon has a 14% walk rate. But Brandon makes up for it with a better strikeout rate, 10 points better, 15% for Quinn, 25% for Sproat. But then one of the stats we use called fielding independent pitching, FIP, identical, 4.77, 4.78. So my point here and what I'm getting at is it took some patience for Quinn, and he turned out to be one of the most important starters for the Brewers last season. Let's give even more grace to Brandon Sproat, who came in with only 4 starts in his big league career, because you see it in flashes of brilliance. And Pat Murphy agreed so, saying he is going to be a high-end starter one day. And Pat Murphy's never wrong. He's generally just early. So when we look at what Sproat can do, what he can learn from, it's a reminder. We just saw the blueprint last year. Quinn struggled when he first came over. Then he really started to turn it on about this time of year and going into June.
He did. And, you know, they are closely related when you look at it. I just think when you look at a kid like Sproat is a guy who you look at the upside. There's so much upside. You look at the quality of the pitches, quality of the way the fastball comes out of his hands, what he can do, look at the quality of his breaking ball and his cutter and what he's trying to do with his cutter, shorten it up a little bit and a little bit of a change that he does have. I think when you look at a guy with the overall upside, you got to say Sproat has probably as much upside as any pitcher that they have on this ball club other than Miz. And when you look at the way he's been throwing the baseball, I thought he throws the ball good. The biggest thing comes with efficiency. And efficiency, what usually happens is you're trying to do too much with your pitches. You got your breaking balls too big, or you're trying to overthrow it, or you're trying to be too fine with your cutter or breaking ball slider, or you're trying to be too fancy with your fastball in certain locations. I think the big thing with Sproat and what he's going to get as he goes along, he's going to learn, just like Priester did last year, how to simplify the game. Simplify what you do to be successful. 89 pitches over 4 innings is not acceptable. It's just not. That means, number one, what's he doing? Is his attitude saying, hey, I've got to strike people out. I've got to get to 2 strikes, and when I get them, I got to strike them out. Or is it say, hey, you know what? I want to learn how to simplify the game and pitch to contact. I think what Sproat learns to pitch to contact, like Priester did last year, game changes immensely for him. You get a lot of first ball ground balls. You get a lot of first ball ground balls, and you get a lot of contact early in the counts. He's going to be able to go deeper in the ball game, but that comes with efficiency, and that efficiency comes with maybe sometimes it's location of pitches, how you think about what you want to locate with your fastball. But I think it simplifies your breaking ball. You don't have to throw the big breaking ball, the sharp breaking ball, or the cutter on the outside, or the little bit off-speed stuff you do. You simplify the game. You throw strikes with the simplified secondary pitches, and all of a sudden everything kind of falls into place.
Well, you look at the second inning, right? He walks the first 2 batters of the frame, falling behind on both of them, Hernandez and Rushing. And then just, hey, it's the bottom of the order. Go attack. He struck out Ha-Sung Kim. He struck out Miguel Rojas. And now it's like, all right, bud, here you go. Here's Shohei, because you made this mess yourself. And he gets in the fly out to left field. And then he was in that mess again in the 4th inning. He nearly had a chance to get out of it, getting there were 2 outs and men on first and second. And he hits Miguel Rojas. Yep. And then a wild pitch to Shohei allowed the tying run at the time to score. But again, what you're talking about is, hey, man, simplify it. You did it earlier. You don't got to make a perfect pitch to Miguel Rojas. And I'm not saying that as like a bad thing. I'm saying that, hey, you've already got him once today. You've proven it to yourself. Go do it again. Trust your stuff. It's nasty. And he got Ohtani the 2 times he had to face him. The other time he walked him on 4 pitches. So the stuff's good enough to get big league hitters out. I wonder if he has the confidence to believe that.
Well, look at the pitches he made in the 2nd inning. He made some real quality pitches to get out of that inning. A couple of strikeouts there, and then he made great pitches, consistent pitches. He made a couple of pitches when he needed to get a guy out. He doubled up on a breaking ball and got him there. And it seemed that that 4th inning, he got to the part where that's where you get into that efficiency, simplifying the game, trying not to overdo what you do. And I think he just got that wild pitch. It looked like he hung on to it. He's trying to do too fancy and overextended himself. That's where that comes into place, where you automatically take that step off, slow the game down a little bit, come back and do what you know you did before, stay positive in what you do. And it's going to be a combination of slowing the game down, being more efficient, saying, being confident in what you got. He's got the quality of the pitches are there. The ball comes out of his hand, it's just electric, and he does have a great upside. And I agree with Murph. I think he's going to be a number one starter as he goes on in his career. It's just going to take some time.
I mean, this is from the no-duh department, Dom, but this is for some buy or sell. Hey, pitchers got to get ahead, right? You got to get ahead in the count. Well, opponents this year against Brandon Sproat, including today, when Sproat's ahead in the count, they're only hitting .147 with an on-base percentage of just .171 when Sproat is ahead of the count. Now, here's the punch. Here's the punchline here. When he's behind in the count, it's a .267 average, so it's up by about 120 points. Mm-hmm. But the on-base percentage jumps to .542. They're getting on base more than half the time when the batter is ahead in the count versus Sproat. It's a pretty simple formula.
Efficiency. Understanding that, you know, you back off and you got to be confident in what you do, that if you make a good pitch, you're going to, it's going to work out good for you. And I think when you get in those counts, what he's trying to do right now, instead of slowing that game down, say, hey, what do I have to do here to be successful? He's speeding the game up and trying to do too much. And that's going to come with time. I still think that, you know, I heard earlier in a telecast that they're trying to change his, when he works out, is have him throw 15 pitches, sit down, get him into that quandary of where, hey, you know what, I'm going to work it like my side sessions are going to be like the game, and hopefully that works into it. But just today, you could see it, that fourth inning, how much different it was. Just overthrew that ball got away, it was a wild pitch, and they were able to score on trying to do too much with a pitch in a certain situation, not slowing the game down.
That's the easiest thing to buy, is get ahead in the count for Brandon Sproat. It's brought to you by Tony Wendorf & Associates. If you're looking to buy or sell a home, trust Tony Wendorf & Associates, one of the top real estate teams in Wisconsin. Empowered by Keller Williams, they bring faith, family, and a red carpet experience to every home deal. Step up to the plate with a winning team behind you, WendorfTeam.kw.com. Now, Augie, before I let you go, we lost a Brewers fan favorite, arguably a legend. He's on the Wall of Honor, and Charlie Moore today. And I know he's a teammate of yours and a close friend of yours. I'm thinking of you and wanted to give you the floor to share some memories with good old Charlie and some great memories, obviously, on those teams in the 80s.
Yeah, I hope I don't break up. Charlie was a good friend. You know, you talk about teammates. We had a group of teammates back then who were very, very close. And not only were we close as teammates, when we went on the road, we always went out together. Or we're at the ballpark, we were always together in the clubhouse and those things. Our families were close. When we were in spring training, all the families stayed in the same spot. We were all together. We spent a lot of time together. And Charlie was one of those guys that you didn't have to say much to Charlie. When Charlie was in the clubhouse, if there was a joke played on a guy in the clubhouse, I'll guarantee you, Charlie Moore was right in the middle of it. And he was so funny. He loved doing it. He was such a great guy. But when you talk about him as a ball player, he would do anything he could to help the ball club. And he showed that in his versatility, how he went from being a catcher to a right fielder and became a very, very good right fielder. We are all known from the time he threw out Reggie Jackson at third base in the World Series, what he did, or in the playoffs, to get there. And he was just one of those guys that you could always count on. You could always count him as a friend. He was a dear friend, and he's going to be sorely missed, because Charlie's one of those guys that, when you need somebody, Charlie was always there for you.
Yeah, what a tough loss for the Brewers family today. I'm thinking of you and your family.
Thank you.
Charlie, I mean, I'm looking at his World Series box scores right now. He had 9 hits in the World Series in 82. And here's a good note for the difference of the game. Didn't strike out once in
That's
the World
Charlie.
Series.
He put the he was just this guy. There were times when in our career when we were together for 10 years, and there were times in spring training where he didn't know if he was going to make a team, you know. And all of a sudden he'd say, "I'm just going to go try hard," and they keep him. And every time they needed him, he's a guy. He's pesky at the plate. He run the bases well. He'd do whatever you would do. I always said at the end, the back part of our order was Gantner and Moore. And those two guys, I see them guys circling the bases so many times. When you need something clutch, those guys were always there for you.
Yeah, so we're thinking of everybody around the Charlie Moore family. Passed at 72 years old yesterday. So appreciate you sharing that sentiment and thinking of you. And hope you enjoy the rest of your Memorial Day weekend. You'll be sitting on the couch. I hope you got a beverage in your hand and getting ready to watch the Brewers get to work against the Cardinals.
I got to watch Miz. Tomorrow's Miz Day. It's like a holiday. I got to watch that.
And Dollar Dogs.
Oh,
what a day.
It's going to be fun.
All right. Jerry Augustine joining us here on 620 WTMJ. Appreciate you, Augie.
Anytime.
All right. Back with more after this. Get to some of these texts I'm behind on as well on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to Brewers Extra Innings.
Welcome back. 5-1 defeat. 4 of the runs scoring in that fifth inning for the Dodgers. Each of the first 4 reached, highlighted by a 2-run triple by Kyle Tucker and a 2-run homer by Andy Páez. We'll get to some of these texts. Alex from Oshkosh, tough series for the Brewers, but in the words of Tom Petty, I won't back down. Jeff from Elkhorn, got to give Yamamoto a lot of credit today. Brewers knew they need to figure out a way to get some pop from the offense. Being last in the majors in homers is troubling. I know our left side of the infield takes a lot of heat, but Sal has to take a step this year as well. We can't have that many holes in the lineup. Agree with that entirely there. Jeff from Doug, once again, no offense. Down 16-4 in the last 2 games. Bring up Jet. Why not? Vaughn's not being mistaken for Mo Vaughn. Vaughn will be fine. He'll get back on track. Kevin Rubin, hey, thanks for reaching out, Kevin. Sending Sproke back out for the fifth was a bit of a stretch, but I understand the need to push him for development. Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth there, Kevin, where you got to find out what you got. I know they had a fresh bullpen, but at times it looks untouchable. And the fact that he cleared Ohtani there in the fourth inning, you would have think, okay, get through it. And he got ahead of Mookie 1-2, allowed an infield single. He got ahead of Freddie Freeman 1-2, or 2-2, I should say, and then ultimately walked him. And after that, it was all downhill. I mean, even Drouin got ahead of Kyle Tucker 1-2 before he hit his triple on a 3-2 pitch. So he's not alone in that one for his development. Now, a couple of texts here. Jenny also and Kevin asking about the pinch hitters there in the ninth inning. Were the Brewers waving a white flag? Were they conceding it? I think it's more about trying to get Renjifo out of the cooler, right? He didn't play these last two games. Gary really didn't play for like a week straight, and you kind of saw the rust in yesterday's game. Perkins, I feel bad for him right now, given he went from playing, you know, maybe 3-4 times a week last season and the year prior to now really being relegated to a bench bat, but it's blunt, but it's the truth. The Brewers are kind of going through it right now offensively. It wasn't so much just about we need to get a righty up here down by four. It was let's get these guys out of the cooler and see if anything can happen. You never know when these things roll forward. This one from Mark. Is it the way the team will be going forward, especially today with two pitchers going and then four runs, or is it more like yesterday with the Fasco and a bunch of different pitchers and struggling when you lose a series? So I think that, Mark, that this was kind of a perfect storm today where, again, the inefficiency from Sproat led him vulnerable in that fifth inning. Drouin can give you multiple innings, and he did so and did his job, but the Brewers, as we've seen under the Craig Council era too, you don't chase a win when you're down by four with your A bullpen. You just never do that because one day each leads to the next. Now, if the Brewers had used McGill and Uribe for some reason today and all of a sudden they're in a close game in the day game tomorrow and they're ineffective, it's like, well, why'd you use them yesterday, right? So it gets in between there. That's why you don't use your leverage arms when you're trailing in the game. And the Dodgers certainly took control of this contest, and they held onto it with two hands the rest of the way. What I look at in that bullpen right now for the Brewers is that underbelly of, hey, Chad Patrick is one of the guys they're suddenly starting to trust down there. And I had a great conversation with DL Hall earlier today in the clubhouse about yesterday's outing and about the start to his season overall. And he just kept saying, I got to stop nibbling. I got to stop just being so perfect with my pitches, because he sort of got used to that back when he was sitting 92, 93 of like, all right, well, let's start throwing junk. Let's start to deceive hitters. And now that the 96, 97 has come back for Hall, he's trying to be too perfect. And he knows that he's got a new outlook on the rest of this season for him of just being too cute needs to stop for him. And he knows he can be a big part of that middle relief that's just as important as the leverage relief. You don't get to the leverage relief without middle relief, if you get what I'm saying there. So the Brewers are in this weird position where they have too many starters, air quotes here, that could be starting pitchers. And Brandon Sproat is going to stay as a starter. All right, let's make that very clear. Shane Drouin could be a starter, but he's sort of in this hybrid role while the Brewers see what they have with the rest of this team, meaning if somebody else needs an extra day of rest, Drouin can come in and make a spot start, just like you could see Chad Patrick come in and make a spot start. Normally, your length relievers aren't somebody you trust in situations like we saw Drouin get into today's game. Unfortunately, giving up back-to-back run scoring hits wasn't on the bingo card. Otherwise, he was dominant beyond that point. But hey, life as a reliever, you got to come into the fire and be ready to go. And now in back-to-back outings for Drouin against the Dodgers, it hasn't gone their way. I see the sentiment and I see the frustration about a salary cap and about the best team that money could buy, and all of that is a very hard thing to talk about in a condensed post-game show. But what I see in this series in particular, the Brewers didn't lose this series because of the lack of a salary cap or the difference in the money between these two teams. The Brewers didn't play to their standard this weekend. I think there's a difference. And I think that we could talk about what could change to the roster in the next week or two, whether it be guys getting healthy like Woodruff and Koenig potentially and Zastrzyzny, and then hopefully getting better performances from, say, the left side of the infield, having a healthy Yelly back, having a healthy Churio. Churio's really kind of been a one-hit-a-day kind of guy. That will pop in the right direction, too. But again, if the Brewers played to their standard and got beat, I think it'd be a different tone in today's broadcast, in today's show. Today now becomes more of a just kind of a dud feeling because you know you didn't play your best against the Dodgers, and it's frustrating, but you'll see them again later this season, and maybe they're just doing things differently. Maybe they'll lose both series of the regular season to the Dodgers, and then maybe they'll meet again in October and make it count this time, as the Brewers next see the Dodgers not until August, so both of these teams could look very, very different. They'll be going there for a four-game set August 13th through the 16th. It's a Thursday through Sunday series in L.A. All right. We got all that out of the way. Let's hear from the manager, Pat Murphy. He's coming up next as the Brewers fall 5-1 to the Dodgers right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Tough to pick a International Autos Group player of the game on the Brewers side of things today. No one had multiple hits. No one had an extra base hit. Sproat's the losing pitcher. I guess you can give it to Yamamoto on the other side. But it's been that kind of a series for the Brewers. They went 0-4 with runners in scoring position in today's loss. The player of the game is brought to you by International Autos Group. Just like the game's MVP, you can drive into summer in a style. Save up to $15,000 on select in-stock models. Visit iamilwaukee.com. International Autos, where ordinary needs to be extraordinary. The Brewers fall today 5-1. The manager, Pat Murphy, quick to give praise to Sproat despite taking the loss.
Yeah, I thought Sproat was really good, guys. I really did. But he wasn't as efficient. Yamamoto was efficient. You know what I mean? He kept attacking. We couldn't string hits together. He was very, very good. That's why he was MVP of the deal, and that's why he continues to be one of the top pitchers in the game. Yeah, we had some chances early, but he really limited our, he didn't give up free bases. We gave up six walks, a hit by pitch, a wild pitch. You know, that's too much. Yeah, the Dodgers were solid. They played solid. They sat back, played solid. They got timely hits. You know, you neutralize one of their stars and another guy beats you, you know, Tucker hits a shot down right down the line over the bag, and that ends up being devastating. If that ball's right to the first baseman, we turn two, it looks like a different ball game. So, yeah, that's the way it goes. Drohan, I thought, threw the ball really, really well. I thought Sproat threw the ball well, but he's got his pitch count crawling up to 90, which we, you know, as high as we can go. We got two lefties coming up. We didn't get the job done when we had to there in that whatever inning that was.
Is there anything that you're seeing consistently from one start to the next that's leading to those higher pitch counts for Sproat and quicker hooks in the back of efficiency?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of three ball counts. You know, he's behind 2-0 a ton. But he's throwing the ball good and he shows flashes of brilliance. That's what rookies do, you know. I think there's huge upside for this kid. I'm excited as heck. It's unfortunate. You know, it's unfortunate. I mean, could we have left him for Tucker? Yeah, we could have. But, you know, bottom line is we thought that was a better move and it didn't work out. But.
Talk about those flashes from Sproat. We've seen it basically in every outing so far, but the end results kind of have all been similar. You've talked to in the past about you're not just going to throw that out there to kind of figure it out. Just where do you guys kind of stand?
Well, he's so good. He's so good when he's good that it gives you hope that, I mean, he's facing a great lineup today, but he's so good when he's good that, and he's done some great things for us already this year. He's had a couple rough outings, but in no way, shape, or form when I think we're considering getting him out of there. I think conversely, we're not sticking with him. This guy's got a chance to be a high-end starter. And, you know, he's a rookie. So rookies are going to go through that. Just like if there was a guy in our lineup. Now, if there's a guy without that kind of stuff Kurt, I see what you're saying. If there's a guy that we're popping in and out of there because of an injury or something like that, now that guy's got to be a little more efficient or we're not going to hang with him. But a kid like this has such upside that, you know, we lived with some of this last year with Miz too, you know what I mean? But he shows, Sproat shows some brilliance. And, you know, today's outing wasn't ideal, but if you look at his line before Drone gave up the triple in the homer, you know, it was a decent line with too many walks.
His pitches, but a lot of bad misses came on sinkers. Does it feel like that's a pitch that's kind of caused some of the trouble?
Well, it's new for him, right? It's something he hasn't done a lot of, the sinker, in the past, right? So it's new for him, and he's going to struggle with it a little bit. Yeah.
About the other model, so here is not as dominant as the last one, playoff, but he used a lot of weak contact. So what makes the hitters too difficult to hit?
Yeah. He has a good enough heater where you got to honor the fastball, and that split looks like the heater. They don't recognize it as soon as they'd like, and that ball is just dipping just enough. It's just enough off the velocity. If it's 92 versus 95 or 96, it's 92 with a little dip, very hard to see, and, you know, he induces weak contact that way. Hard to lay off of. You know, then he throws, he had a great pitch. He threw a backdoor cutter to Hamilton and a 3-2 count. To be able to execute that after, you know, not seeing a cutter at all, I mean, it's just great. He really, he has so many weapons. Now, if he misses with that cutter, he's going to kick himself, and now we got a runner at first and a good runner. And but he does a good job of controlling the running game. He's really, really good. But you got to get him. You got to get him when you can get him. And you, I don't think you can take a standard approach against him. I think you got to take something a little different against him next time we face him. A little different approach.
So for the approach that you could do, I mean, I think the Brewers are in this weird in between where you got to let them get out there and learn. And at 30-20, it's amazing that they've done this with so much youth on this staff to this point. Take a breather, come back with more. Talk a little ABS, shall we, on 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings.
Some interesting stuff here about ABS for the Brewers. Welcome back. I'm Dom Cotrone. We only got a few minutes left in the program here. But I'm looking at the numbers. This doesn't include today, but ABS is an offense for the Brewers. They have the second fewest total pitches challenged in baseball. And furthermore, we can even project how often you should be challenging. And the Brewers are among the bottom in that one, too, meaning they're not challenging enough. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but I know Yelly's been hurt a little bit, so it's a little bit skewed on him. But Yelly and Terang have not challenged a single pitch this season. The Brewers have the worst successful overturn rate as an offense in baseball at just 32%. League average is right about 60. So I wonder, or I should say the hitters are about 50%. The catchers and fielders are about 60% based on who initiates the challenge. So I wonder what the Brewers feel they can do on stealing a strike or two or making sure they keep a ball with the ABS challenge system. Because it's really just the catchers challenging for the Brewers. It's really just Gary and William. Because when you bring up the total, and this is just as hitters, mind you, not including what they do as catchers, Gary's leading the way with 16 challenges on the team, right? So that means the rest of the club has 18 challenges between them. Sal is 1-3. Garrett is 1-2. No one else is, no one, even including Gary, is above 500 when they're challenging. So whatever it may be, whatever the decision needs to be about challenging more often or challenging the right pitches or whatever it may be, but the Brewers are off to an ice-cold start, and it's something I really want to monitor moving forward with their ABS, because you look on the other side, I thought defensively, William's a really good catcher at identifying when and where to do so. He's among the most challenged catchers in the game, and that he's not afraid to do it. Today, he challenged two more pitches, got one of them right. He's at 62 challenges total on the season, which I believe is currently leading. I'm pulling that up right now, and that is indeed the case. He is leading baseball by a good margin over Edgar Caro and Nick Fortes. But he's still, you know, when you look at under the hood of the advanced stuff really likes how often he's challenging, how effective he's been, flipping strikeouts, flipping walks. It's been very, very good. But just something to monitor. Maybe we'll get to the bottom of it later this week against the Cardinals. Let's preview that series up next as we get ready to say goodbye. Some good pitching and maybe another return on the way. We'll talk about that after this on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to Brewers Extra Innings.
All right, final couple minutes here. Tomorrow, Memorial Day day game. Hope you're out here at the ballpark for it. 1:10 first pitch. We're on the air at noon with Brewers warm-up. Matthew Liberatore for the Cardinals and the Miz. Jacob Mizrowski riding 24 and a third consecutive scoreless innings into tomorrow's start. Maybe the way too early Cy Young leader in the clubhouse right now. Then a back to a night game on Tuesday. That'll be a 6:40 first pitch. Michael McGreevy for St. Louis, Kyle Harrison for the Brewers. And then on Wednesday, back to a day game finale and back to the 12:40 first pitch. Dustin May is scheduled for St. Louis. Now, the Brewers have TBD listed. Now, within the organization, there is chatter and hope that that could be Brandon Woodruff, but they don't want to be committed to it at this point. They would also need to make a roster move to activate him off the injured list. He had three ups for a live AB session earlier this homestand. Perhaps he's going to cap off the homestand with a start back from his dead arm shoulder, minor shoulder operation while he was away. He last pitched at the end of April, that last game against the Arizona Diamondbacks. So we'll monitor that for Wednesday. We will have a post-game show and pre-game show tomorrow. Again, on the air at noon tomorrow. And we'll be with you after the game. I know it's a day game on a Monday. It's a holiday. Everyone else is off. But we're here talking ball with you, getting ready for this series with the Redbirds. Tuesday, it won't be me. It'll be Bob Brainerd sitting in this chair on Tuesday. And then Wednesday, no post-game show. But we'll have a taped Brewers Weekly for you Thursday night. At 8 o'clock and on the YouTube page on ESPN Milwaukee, as well as the podcast feed Brewers All Access, wherever you get your pods. So the Brewers fall today 5-1. They dropped the series, and yet they're still in first place at 30-20 in the first 50 games of the year. The unofficial start to summer comes tomorrow, Memorial Day. Lest we forget, though, why we are celebrating as we honor all those who lost their lives giving the ultimate sacrifice to our nation. And finally, one last time, do some reading up on Charlie Moore here tonight for younger Brewers fans who, as you heard Jerry Augustine talk lovingly of his old friend Charlie. So rest in peace to Charlie Moore, and our thanks to you for listening. Our producer has been Evan Witalison. I'm Dom Catronio. Keep on swinging.